It's the Big Dumb Picture Show. And welcome to Big Dumb Picture Show. I am your host, Dustin Meadows. For those of you just tuning in for the first time, which is everyone, because this is the first episode. This podcast is actually born out of the ashes of an old podcast I used to do called How Have You Not Seen This? Where I would bring on comedians, actors, musicians, all kinds of folks to come on, and we watch movies that they'd never seen before. And then we killed that podcast about a year ago, and well, now we're bringing it back as Big Dumb Picture Show, where I bring on comedians, musicians, all kinds of other local, prominent, fun people, and we talk about movies. So real excited to be bringing that back. You can check out old episodes of How Have You Not Seen This on iTunes, and you can check this one out right now because you're listening to it. So with that out of the way, we're going to get into the show itself. Today I am joined by a couple very good friends, a couple wonderful local comics here in Columbus. First, Nikki Winkleman.
Hello.
And Pat Deering.
Hey, Dustin.
And we've got them on. Nikki was a guest on How Have You Not Seen This in the past. Pat is popping his cherry, so to speak. So, really excited to have both of them on. And
popping Pat's cherry.
Popping the old cherries. And our first movie today, for the first episode of the podcast, we are watching a series of movies very near and dear to my heart, the Blade Trilogy. And today we started with Blade, of course, the first entry in the series. 1998 film from New Line Cinema, directed by Stephen Norrington, who I looked into it, directed four films. This was his second. His last film was The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh. Really? What was his first?
Some weird... it's called like The Death Machine or something. It was some some really bizarre, like cyberpunk horror sounding thing that I'd never heard of. Like Blade and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen are the only two of those four movies that I'd heard of.
Interesting.
But the first one had Rachel Weisz in it in a very minor role, Mrs. Darren Aronofsky. So I thought that was odd. But yeah, real drop off in quality between Blade and Stephen Norrington's last film, because League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is hot garbage.
I have not seen that.
It is bad. I cannot promise that we're going to do it on this podcast, because man, fuck that movie.
The movie that finally killed Sean Connery.
Yeah. It is most notable for being Sean Connery's final film role before he retired. Huh. It's a shame that was his swan song. You know, like Philip Seymour Hoffman at least got like a P.T. Anderson film to go out on. Sean Connery gets League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with other well-known stars such as the guy who played Dracula in Van Helsing. And yeah, that's about it star power-wise for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. But Blade's also notable for being only the second Marvel theatrical release. The first, of course, being Howard the Duck from the 80s, directed by George Lucas. And they're...
All right.
At this point, Blade was the fourth Marvel film, but only the second for a theatrical release, because there was a Captain America movie, and there was a Punisher film in the 80s starring Dolph Lundgren in the title role. But Blade was only the second theatrical release. So the movie, of course, stars Wesley Snipes as Blade, who, man, you could not have picked a better person for this fucking movie. I was reading up a little bit about it, because obviously I love these movies. Basically, the role was down. They wanted either Denzel, Lawrence Fishburne, or Wesley Snipes. And I love Denzel and Larry Fishburne, but neither of them would make sense as Blade.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they landed on Wesley Snipes, who, of course, by this point in the mid to late 90s, was already a very on-the-rise action star. He'd done Passenger 57 at this point, and, of course, Demolition Man, which I can almost guarantee will be an episode of this show later at some point. And then Stephen Dorff as the villain, Deacon Frost. And Stephen Dorff, I'm not super familiar with, but I know that I like him in this.
Has he done anything since?
Oh, yeah. I feel like Stephen Dorff is in much smaller fare. Like, the last thing I remember seeing his name attached to was Fear.com, which, of course, I did not see.
Yeah, I did not see that.
And I know he was in Cecil B. Demented, which is supposed to be a great movie, but I've never seen that one. And then you have Inbusha Wright, who plays Dr. Karen Jensen, who's another one of the major characters. And then Kris Kristofferson, old Billy the Kid himself,
yeah.
as Abraham Whistler Blade's sort of Q, so to speak, in this movie. So pretty solid cast. Also notable, R-rated, which is not usually what happens with a lot of these comic book movies. And this movie also obviously predating X-Men, and I don't think Blade gets the credit it deserves for the comic book movies boom at all, because 1998 would have put it right after Batman and Robin,
mm-hmm.
when people said, oh, okay, so comic book movies are dead now, right?
Oh, I loved Batman and Robin.
Oh, a lot of people did. It made a shitload of money. But man, people do not like that movie, and rightly so, because fuck that movie. But because yeah, X-Men wasn't until 2000, I think 2000 or 2001. So it gets a lot of the credit that Blade should have gotten for kind of kickstarting the comic book thing. And of course, now today with the juggernaut that's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that
no,
probably
pun
would
on
not
juggernaut.
Exist. Oh God, if only we'd gotten a good juggernaut. Thanks a lot, Brett Ratner.
Yeah,
I think you know, Blade did at least set the stage for gratuitous use of leather in
Superman
movies.
Very much so. Although, to Blade's credit, in the comic books, that's actually pretty close to how Blade dresses, as opposed to Bryan Singer saying, I know it's a comic book movie, but we can't have them wearing yellow spandex. That's just be ridiculous. You have a dude that shoots red lasers from his eyes and a guy with claw fingers. Fuck you, Bryan Singer. You coward.
Also a guy who's a toad.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Also Darth Maul, who is a toad with black contacts. So there's a little bit about Blade. Let's get into the million dollar question on the other podcast. Neither of you guys have seen Blade before.
No.
Which is a gross affront to me, because I love two of these three movies very much. So Nikki, how have you not seen this?
Well, I don't like blood. Number one,
okay.
I asked you at the beginning if this was going to be scary, and you said no, and you lied to me. I will have nightmares of a hilarious nature.
I think we have very different barometers for scary.
Yes, I am squeamish and easily afraid.
Okay,
now,
so
I've gotten better as I've gotten older, but I think definitely back in 1998, this would have been too much nightmare fodder for old Winks.
For young Nikki Winkleman. Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of blood.
Yeah. There was a lot of blood, like right away.
Oh, yeah.
From sprinklers.
From the sprinkler system, yeah.
So, okay, so really quick, I'm curious, what is like the worst offender as far as like scary movies for you?
Oh, you know what? This isn't that bad. Like when it comes to scary movies, it's the psychological stuff that pushes. I don't like gore, but I also don't like psychologically scary. I feel like The Exorcist, as ridiculous as that is.
No,
like,
that's not.
The
Exorcist is kind of a horrifying movie.
It's horrifying.
It's
Psycho also got me like real bad, because I saw that when I was in like 7th grade.
Yeah.
And that one.
Yeah. If you've stayed at a hotel ever, it could happen to you.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like 7 is about as scary as I can go.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. 7 is pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
What's the, like, that you can say now, what's the dumbest movie that's ever scared you? Like, is there one that, like, scared you at one
happening.
Point?
I legitimately couldn't sleep after watching The Happening.
Did you have to like go home and like throw out all of your house plants?
I was like, damn you, Al Gore, you have gotten me.
Was it just the entire movie in particular? Was there like one scene that really drove it home?
I don't know. I think it was just all the gratuitous images of suicide that got
me.
It was just, there's a lot of suicide in that movie. I mean, the whole premise is ridiculous, but People laying down in front of lawnmowers, I don't think I ever needed to see.
No. God, I remember seeing that movie when it came out, and it was the entire hype behind it was like, oh, it's M. Night Shyamalan's first R movie. And that was all I had to coast on, because after the opening 5 minutes where people are like just like walking off buildings and the dude like climbs into the lion enclosure is like, oh damn, this is fucking intense.
Yeah.
And then later it was like, oh wow, Zooey Deschanel is a really bad actress. Okay, I'm completely taken out of this now.
Right. And then it was all Save the Earth. Spoiler alert.
I think my most ridiculous scary movie, the one that I laugh about now, is actually Gremlins.
Yeah.
Because the movie itself, like, I was fine up until the end of the movie. Like, I saw them like jumping out of a Christmas tree and attacking the mom and like killing Billy's poor science teacher. I was fine with all of that. Like, none of that rattled me at all. Like, little 9-year-old Dustin Meadows just watching Gremlins, just like, oh, this is whimsical. They're terrible, but this is fun. I'm having a good time. And what got me was at the very end of the movie when the father is doing the voiceover narration and he's like, if your laundry machine goes on the fritz or the lights start cutting out, better check around because you might have a gremlin in your house. I didn't fucking sleep for two nights.
Yeah.
Like, the little sleep I got, I had nightmares about fucking gremlins because that guy planted the idea that I might have them in my brain.
See, I never even watched Gremlins as a kid because I was afraid of Fraggle Rock. Because I identified most with the old man and the dog, and I was like, he's got scary puppets living under his floors. I want nothing to do with this.
Oh, man. So,
Blade a little on the gory side for me, but it was enjoyable.
Oh, man. I think it gets a little bit better as we go on. I don't know that Blade 2 and Trinity are gorier than. They're probably just as gory, I think.
I don't know. I think part of it, too, is that like a lot of the like deaths ended in ridiculous explosion. So that didn't bother me as much.
Yeah.
You know, because you didn't really have like they killed mostly vampires.
Yes.
And when the vampires die, there's not like a ton of blood. There's just like explosion and dust and some CGI bones.
Except for the three that exploded in just giant
blood. Exploded into blood, yeah. But I don't know, it seems so ridiculous. Geyser. It's like that scene in Scanners. Like, it's so ridiculous that it's not.
It's very cartoonish.
It's not gross, I guess. I don't know.
It's good to know. I feel like we've learned a lot about you, Nikki.
Well, how is Pat not seeing this?
Yeah.
I'm really, really bad at remembering to watch movies. I have a list of, like, 100 that people have told me to watch, and I've made no progress.
What are a couple of like the big ones, like the ones that like everyone tells you should watch? I'm curious.
I have not seen Avatar.
You're not missing much.
I never saw Attack of the Clones.
Really?
Yeah. I just
Hold on. So this implies that you've seen every other Star Wars.
Yes.
I feel like even just out of spite, you would have seen Attack of the Clones by now.
I would think so, too. If I don't see it in the theaters, I never get around to watching it.
Did you just not grow up in a household with the Spike Network? Like,
<'cause>, man, I didn't grow up in a household with the Spike Network. Man, we had an antenna and we dealt with it.
Man, because they ran the prequels all the goddamn time after like 2005.
Yeah, it was always like holidays too, right? It was like Christmas or like
New Year's. They just
like
do a Star Wars marathon.
Whatever holiday they weren't running all the old James Bond movies.
Yeah. God, that inch. I mean, I can't make an argument that you should have seen it because it's just as bad.
What year did that come out?
That was 2002.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For Attack of the Clones. So the first post 9/11 Star Wars, if that means anything.
Yeah.
I don't think it does, but who knows? Who knows what George Lucas was thinking when he made those? What are a couple others? I'm curious.
I haven't seen a good number of the Marvel movies either.
Really?
I didn't see Captain America or Winter Soldier, but then I saw Civil War.
Okay.
Civil War, you know, was fine without having seen the other two. Still made some sense.
Yeah.
Superheroes punching each other.
I hadn't either, and then I binged all of them in one really bad flu. The flu and Amazon Prime, which was a good combination.
And then outside of the action genre, I guess, I haven't seen a lot of like like Oscar winning movies either. Like, I never saw Birdman.
I never saw that either.
Yeah, like I just if I don't see it in the theaters, I never think to go back and watch it.
That's fair.
Yeah, that happens to me too. I think do you have Netflix or
I do, but Netflix, like I turn it on and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna break myself out of just watching BoJack Horseman all day. But then I just watch BoJack Horseman all day.
See, I don't have a Netflix account. I have Amazon Prime, so I watch some movies on that. But most of them you still have to rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, I just end up watching the same movies that I have on VHS. Just mostly Disney
I also I still have a little bit of like movie rental PTSD from the time that I got Resident Evil from a Redbox and forgot to return it and then had to pay Redbox $50 for Resident Evil.
For the first one?
Yes.
Oh man, that's whew. A new one just came out too.
I know, that's the sixth one now. Fifth one.
I think six. Cause let's see. There's the first one. There's Afterlife. There's Extinction. Uh-huh. There's Afterlife, Retribution. And, yeah, I think this is the sixth. I've seen all but one of them in theaters. Because I am just a glutton for punishment. I really like going to the theater and watching bad movies with my friends and usually getting drunk to do it. I specifically remember going to see Green Lantern at a midnight showing when it came out, and I snuck in a pint of Mad Dog 2020, slammed it all in the first 10 minutes, which left me with a whole 110 minutes to go without alcohol.
Oh, no.
It was fucking awful.
See, little known fact, actually, there's no CGI in Green Lantern. All of that is just Mad Dog 20. They just spray it all over the set in every single scene.
Oh, man. It might have made the movie better if that were true. Interesting. Okay, so we've got an idea why you guys haven't seen this movie. So let's talk about it. Do you like it? Hate it? How do you feel about Blade?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I laughed a lot. I don't know if that's the correct reaction.
There's certainly, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But
I liked it.
Okay.
They break a lot of stuff.
Yes, you were very concerned.
Very upsetting. They just lots of breaking and littering and.
You had a lot of sympathy for whoever had to dress that set every time they had to do another take.
What was their glass budget? That's what I want to know.
Oh man,
through a lot of glass.
Through the roof.
Yeah, every single vampire lives in a Crate and Barrel. And
that's so true. There's like every wall is glass. Every table is glass. Anytime there's giant statues or ancient artifacts, you know there's going to be a terrible fight.
Mm-hmm.
Everything gets destroyed.
But it's fun though. I always like set piece heavy action sequences.
Yes.
Especially the one battle that was literally just him throwing people through glass for three minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or the one where they were down the basement and they were kind of regarding the old vampire Bible
with a little bit of reverence.
Yeah.
And then the vampires come in and immediately start exploding their Bible.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck this. We've got it archived on the computer. We don't need the solid copies. Which also, like, really weird way to display that. Like, that's for them. Like, but it was set up. Like, maybe they bring the vampire kids down there to teach them about their history. It's like their creation museum.
Is it set up in glass like that so you can see both sides of the page? Is that the idea? But it also kind of looks like a mirror funhouse.
Yeah, and that too. It's not practical.
No.
I will give you that.
It was a very large book, though.
Oh, yeah, massive. Mm-hmm. Like, the pages, Jesus. The pages were like poster board size. Like
they're just glass wall size.
Yeah.
Do you imagine trying to read the Bible, except every single page is one of those trifold science fair display things?
All right, here we go. Book of Erebus, chapter one. What do we got? God. What was some of the other stuff? Because there were a couple of times that...
In her apartment, he's just like throwing that... That fake cop through the table, and
he was a real cop. He was a fake vampire.
Oh, fake vampire.
Yeah, he was a familiar.
Well, he's a dirty cop, anyway.
Yeah, which I mean, all of them are.
Oh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to politicize the conversation. Pat was thinking it too, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I am a fan of the Blade trilogy entirely for its treatment of cops as shitbags, which we'll learn more about as we progress through the series.
Did they name the police officer?
Krieger. Officer Krieger.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is it's a very German, very SS sounding name.
Right.
It sounds like almost like the officer in West Side Story. Wasn't he Krupke?
Officer Krupke, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Officer Krieger.
Officer Krupke. Krupp you.
I'm glad they resisted the urge to name all the cops like McCormick and like McSweeney.
Yeah.
And O'Connor.
Well, it's we can assume it's not in Boston. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. It didn't seem like Boston. There weren't any racist vampires in this movie, so.
However, we did decide we couldn't figure out where this was happening.
Yes.
There's not really a named location. It's,
yeah, well, and that's, with the exception of the very end when they're in Russia, I don't think they explicitly, they might in Trinity.
Yeah. Well, they're on a beach at one point.
Yeah.
And there are trains.
Yep.
And they're New York style subway cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it certainly seems like that. And there's definitely a Chinatown district. Yeah.
Yes.
The few shots, though, where they had skyline, they like went out of their way to make sure there was not an identifiable building in those skyline shots.
But I think that was largely the purpose.
Yeah.
Because the idea, too, is that Blade and Whistler have been doing this for years. Like, it's an ongoing thing. So it doesn't matter what city they're in, just that they're doing it and... Mm-hmm. Continuing to do so.
Do they name a city in the comic book?
They probably do at some point, especially because in the comics, a lot of Marvel's superheroes are New York based. Okay. The comic books they jump around because the movie actually kind of steps up from the comics because Blade originally appeared. I believe the series was called Tomb of Dracula. And they modified the character a little bit more. They basically made the character more interesting in the movies, and then the comics changed to reflect that.
Okay.
Which is, I think, is super cool because the movie obviously brought the character a great deal of popularity and attention, so much so that they made two more movies. There was an anime series and a live action series starring a rapper Sticky Fingers as a Blade, which is a false prophet as far as I'm concerned, because there's only one Blade in this world and his name is Wesley Snipes.
Now, did Wesley Snipes also produce the other two?
He ish. Because all three of them are produced in conjunction with the Amun-Ra Films, which is Wesley Snipes' production company.
Right, right.
So, yeah, he's had a hand in producing all of them. And Blade Trinity, things get rocky, and we'll talk about that when we get to Blade Trinity, but there's a lot of shit that went wrong with that movie.
When did that one come out?
That one was 2004 or 2005. I don't remember off the top of my head. I know it came out my freshman year of college.
Okay,
but man, it is not good, and I'm going to be real sad when we talk about it. But these first two, solid.
Yeah.
Like the Blade films are basically just the Weezer discography of superhero movies, because the first two are fucking great. As far as the action sequence we've talked about. I love when there's just unnecessary destruction of property.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that Wesley Snipes is just so brutal. Because one of the things about the character in the comics is that like he's fanatic about his mission, his hunt for vampires, like obsessed basically. And I think a lot of that comes through with this character largely in how cold he is generally and just how incredibly intense and brutal he is when he does fight them, when he kills them. And honestly, like I think this is one of the best adaptations of a comic character, like even stacked up against like the current MCU stuff that's going on right now. Like I think Blade still holds its own almost 20 years after coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the fanaticism in the first few minutes of the movie. I mean, he just like shows up at their rave. Mm-hmm. They weren't even doing anything, yeah. And he just starts mowing them down.
They were about to. They were gonna kill that kid.
Oh, that's right. They did have that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one guy.
But
he killed their DJ.
Hey, look.
Yeah, the DJ wasn't doing anything.
Wasn't he though?
No. It was kind of orchestrating the whole event.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, he was a DJ. Yeah. He probably gets unemployment and works the DJ gig, which is, come on, man, that's not cool.
I am surprised, given that it's a late 90s movie, he didn't kill anybody with a compact disc in that scene.
just started throwing them.
Yeah.
What is it? I don't know why my brain, I just thought of Three Ninjas. Are either of you familiar?
No.
Oh man, I can't believe I pulled that. it was this really bizarre like family movie. It came out in the early 90s. It was just about three kids Pat Morita. I think it's Pat Morita. Yeah, maybe. No, it might be somebody else. I don't remember. I might be confusing it with Karate Kid. Basically, Three Ninjas. There's a scene where like these weird surfer dudes break in their house to kidnap them, and of course they outsmart them because they're dumb surfer dudes, and instead of using a gun, it's a family film, so they try and just not violently abduct children, I guess. And there's just a scene where what the kids like just start throwing CDs at them like you would throw throwing stars at them because they're ninjas, but like, but it's also PG, so they can't kill anyone or maim anyone. Victor Wong. There we go. Victor Wong was the guy, not Pat Morita. Pat Morita was Karate Kid. Victor Wong was in Big Trouble in Little China. What year was that? 92. That sounds about right. Because the guys who were abducting them were very much like, they clearly wanted like Wayne's World, Pauly Shore types, but couldn't afford them because they already had Victor Wong tied to the film. That was their star power. But moving on, like what were some of the other things that kind of stuck out?
Not enough Wesley Snipes without a shirt on. I would have liked more of that.
Yeah, they did wait until the last couple minutes for that.
They
did.
They made you pay full price for that.
They did.
But man, dude's cut.
He is. He's a good looking man.
Oh yeah, it is. Like, and even now, it's insane. He doesn't look like he's aged since Passenger 57, like, which was 91 or 92. Like, that was like his first huge film role, and dude still looks fucking good. Black don't crack. Yeah. Like that is very true.
Yeah. I liked Stephen Dorff too.
Yeah, Stephen Dorff is really fucking good in this, which like kind of makes me sad that I don't see him in more. Like, because like I said, like when I tried pulling earlier, like I couldn't think of more than a few movies. But like he's perfectly cast for this. They tried to get Jet Li for that role, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. But Jet Li turned them down to make Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh my.
So, you know, you win some, you lose some, I guess. But, but yeah, Jet Li makes zero sense for that role. But Stephen Dorff, yeah, fucking phenomenal. Like, and he commits and he sells it. Also, I think kind of an unsung hero of this film is Donald Logue as Quinn, the dude that gets burned and keeps getting his hand cut off throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Grounded for life. Donald Logue.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's fun in this movie. Like I think everyone in this movie is enjoying what they're doing, but like Donald Logue he's just having a blast with that fucking character. Like that has to be so much fun to just go in there and play just goofy characters and just kind of like, I feel like he seems like he probably ad-libbed a lot on set with that role.
Yeah.
And it just seems like a fun time.
And I like that he had braids in his hair quite a bit too.
Yeah.
It was a lot of like late 90s fashion and the shoes and the hairstyles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an enjoyable.
Right.
I like that in the opening sequence, he's making out with a girl and getting a blowjob from a girl at the same time while wearing like a Bret Michaels from Poison straw cowboy hat.
Yep.
And like no one has been with two chicks in a straw cowboy hat since Bret Michaels from Poison in the 80s.
Yep.
And that's it's insane, like some of the fashion stuff. Like I feel like he had a mesh shirt on too.
Yeah, I think there was some mesh in there, lots of mesh and leather.
And then like once like shit starts popping off, like, and Blade comes in, he's like, he's got a jacket and everything. It's like he just completely changed his outfit to go fight Blade from his like casual blowjob couch attire.
Yeah, I didn't expect to see him as a main character in this movie. Mm-hmm. Just from the way he was introduced.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And who's the female, what's her name?
The blonde?
Yeah.
The character's name was Mercury.
Mercury, that's right.
I want to say it was like...
She's got some great 90s style with those big furry coats.
Oh, like, yeah.
Big
yeah.
white furry coat over the slip dress, yeah. Yeah.
And the hair that's just
Arlie
greased
Jover?
Back with like visible
yep,
mousse.
That's the one. Yeah. Every time I saw her wardrobe too, I thought a lot of Drew Barrymore in Batman Forever.
Yep.
Uh-huh. She was Sugar of Sugar and Spice. Two faces, two ladies. One was obviously, you know, dressed in white all the time. One
the
was black.
The angel and the devil and the
yeah,
right, type right. deal. Yeah.
Drew Barrymore and Debbie Mazar, an mm-hmm. unlikely pairing as you'll ever get.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Arlie Cover or Arlie Jover? Yeah, that makes sense. Tracy Lords is in this film too. She's the really? The redhead at the very beginning. She's the girl that takes the guy to the blood rave.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And then as quickly as she was there, she's gone.
Also, I kind of feel like that's a waste of blood.
Yeah. I mean, they were drinking it, but like, how much were they getting on the floor?
Right.
Because we saw
it was
all
a lot
of it.
More dancing than drinking. That's, I think that was kind of why I was like, you didn't have to kill the DJ because he wasn't getting any of that blood.
No, but he turned it on. He was contributing
he turned it
to
on,
the
but
wasting.
He didn't get any.
So was since it was in the back of a slaughterhouse, though, like, was it implied that that was still human blood or was that like cow blood or something?
It's man.
Party
that,
blood.
Just, yeah, just party blood.
Party blood.
Because at one point, like. When she brings him in here, like when he turns and has that what the fuck moment, like I'm pretty sure they wheel like a human body by him.
Oh yeah,
and that's
okay.
what catches his eye.
Yeah.
So I could see it going either way. And that's actually I really like. I don't think it was super intentional on their part because I don't think they knew that this was going to be as successful as it was, and that it was going to spawn a trilogy. But like they kind of bring that back in Trinity, like that idea. Of having like a storehouse for human bodies and blood and stuff, which is like these movies do a lot of solid world building and setting up like the way vampires operate, and like have like that treaty that they mention with humans, which also just makes me more distrustful of government and authority because they would make deals with vampires. So I don't like, I'm going to continue distrusting cops and the government. They could be walking among us right now and we wouldn't know.
I'm fine not knowing. I don't know.
It seems though, like in the Blade universe, you could legitimately try not to notice and you would notice all the vampires.
Yeah.
You would also notice the guy running around in the matte black leather football pads, just
yeah.
cutting them up in broad daylight. Beating the shit out of cops.
Did Stan Lee make an appearance in this film?
I'm glad you said that. This is one of the only movies that Stan Lee does not have a cameo in,
yeah.
Marvel-wise. Huh. And originally, they intended for him to have one, because he was going to be one of the cops that walked in right at the end of the blood rave scene when they found the dude and Quinn burning on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and that, for whatever reason, that was cut. Or it was never shot.
Huh.
But they had every intention of including a Stan Lee cameo.
He just and get I think, the sniffles that day or something.
Yeah, I think this and the Netflix Marvel series are the only like post like kind of new wave of Marvel films that don't have a Stan Lee cameo.
Huh.
Because like even preview, like even before the MCU stuff, like the X-Men movies had him, those awful Fantastic Four movies, even that terrible Hulk movie with Eric Bana had one.
Is that the one where they had like the comic book like pain?
Yeah, because Ang Lee doesn't know how to make a fucking action movie. Yep. Because Ang Lee mainly makes movies about how families can't look each other in the eye.
Did you see that? Did you see that? I didn't see that.
I saw that
I
one.
Watched a lot of Marvel films, but that was one that I skipped.
Oh, the Hulk? No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, that was 2003. Incredible Hulk, there is one. There's a Stan Lee. Yeah, because in Incredible Hulk, Stan Lee, they bottle the soda that's got the Hulk blood, and Stan Lee's the guy that pulls it out of the fridge and drinks it. And they found out that like a contaminated bottle of like gamma radiated Hulk blood got out. But yeah, that one has it, and it also has the why am I blanking on his name? The Lou Ferrigno cameo as well.
Yeah, I skipped all of the Hulk films when I did my binge watch before I was preparing for Civil War.
Yeah. I like Incredible Hulk. I
skipped those, and I skipped Guardians of the Galaxy, but only because I couldn't get it on Prime at the time, but I have watched it since.
No, and that's very much, and that's fair. Guardians is pretty solid.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Incredible Hulk, not required viewing, but I liked it. I really wish Mark Ruffalo would get a solo Hulk movie,
I like Mark Ruffalo a lot. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
I wish it would make Mark Ruffalo a villain in a Blade movie. I would actually love to see Mark Ruffalo play a villain. Like, I'm sure he's had to have played a villain in something by now, but it's probably some art house bullshit that I haven't watched.
I can get the image of Mark Ruffalo as like a French brothel owner out of my head.
Oh, all Marky Ruffs. What else? What are there?
I wasn't crazy about the girl.
Oh, about Mbushi, right?
I mean, maybe it's not her. Maybe I just didn't feel like there was enough development of her character.
No, that role is terribly, like, it's not written with a lot of weight behind it.
I mean, her name was Karen, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Fucking Karen.
Karen? Is that a...
Classic Karen. No, she's...
Is that like a undeveloped character name?
Is it just
like a normal name for...
I always thought there was some kind of...
Underdeveloped... Karen?
Running joke about Karen's just being...
I feel
awful.
Like people are just always mad at a Karen.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I'm going to look back and this is going to wind up being some kind of like Dane Cook joke or something, and I hate myself for saying it on this podcast.
Oh, come on. You hated yourself already.
Michael Malone made a film called Bethlehem, and I played a character named Karen, and they turned it into a series, and my character got cut out, so that will tell you how important Karen is.
Oh, man. Well,
so
that
that's funny to me.
Well,
I didn't make the cut to the...
Michael Malone's listening. He's on fucking notice.
He'll be listening now.
You don't snub my friends, goddammit.
I don't think it's me. I think it's because he named my character Karen. I think
it was a personal attack. It was a personal attack against Nikki Samantha Winkleman. I have to assume it's your middle name. You're such a Samantha.
I have no middle name.
But yeah, that's in these films. I will say there's definitely... Female characters don't get a lot of love or much to do, really. In Trinity, they get too much to do because Jessica Biel is the female lead. And that... Guys, I have a lot of opinions about Blade Trinity, all of which I'm just going to unload on you when we do the episode for Blade Trinity.
I have a lot of opinions about Jessica Biel.
Yeah, oh, perfect. Then it's going to be...
I'm not a fan. I don't think she's a very good actress. I never liked her on Seventh Heaven.
Oh, man, then we are going to get along swimmingly when we talk about Blade Trinity.
I never saw Seventh Heaven either, for the record, if we're still doing that.
Oh, man.
That was a TV show.
Oh, okay.
It was, it was a bad TV show. I think it was the WB at that point. Stephen
John
Collins.
John Tesh-looking guy, yeah.
Stephen Collins, who was... who's played Dennis and Dee's dad, real father in It's Always Sunny.
Oh, okay.
It was like it was just not a good show.
No. Like, we're still talking about Seventh Heaven, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Seventh Heaven is fucking abysmal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the WB is largely just a fucking meat grinder for trash. Like there's been a few shows that have come along. Like there's a great show called Reaper that got canceled way ahead of its time. Which basically the premise is this kid's parents, they sell their firstborns, soul to the devil to save the mother from cancer. And then like on the 21st birthday, the kid has to pay the debt and basically he has to be a bounty hunter for hell. And it's actually a lot of fun. Ray Wise from Twin Peaks plays the devil.
Oh
yeah. It's actually a really fun show. But that's one of the only like fond shows, like shows that I look back on fondly from the WB.
No Jessica Biel.
No Jessica Biel. And, oh man, guys, we should have just watched all three Blade movies and talked about them right now because I am just fuming thinking about Blade Trinity right now.
I'd have to brush up on my Jessica Biel before we watch this movie.
No, you don't need to. You don't need to.
She's not worth it.
You don't need to. The only movie that I've really liked her in was Rules of Attraction. And that was entirely because she played against type as like this promiscuous party girl, like who does drugs and is just a real shitty person. Like, I think there's a scene where like she gangbangs like a volleyball team, like a men's volleyball team. It is give you some background. It's based on a Bret Easton Ellis novel. So if that gives you any idea, the dude that wrote American Psycho. So it's a very fucked up movie. And it's very bizarre seeing Seventh Heaven's Jessica Biel. And it was either when she was doing Seventh Heaven or right after Seventh Heaven. So it was a very drastic turn seeing her play a character like
that. I like how you said that she gangbanged the volleyball team. That gives a lot of power to the woman. I enjoy that. She banged the gang.
She's very much in control of her actions in that movie.
I want our listeners to know that I'm not being sarcastic. I enjoyed that. Power to the woman to bang the gang, not the other way around.
It's called agency. I like it. And I support it. getting away from Blade Trinity, from my angry place.
Back to Blade, original Blade.
There is a lot that I think this movie does well. I mentioned, like I said, the casting of Wesley Snipes is spot on. Like, I would put that in like the five best casting choices Marvel has made over everything. Like, ooh, I would put it up
now
there.
Now I want to know what the other ones are.
I would put Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans as Iron Man and Captain America up there.
Yeah.
Very much so. John Bernthal as the Punisher on Daredevil.
Okay.
And man, who would my other one be? God. I'd have to think.
It's not Scarlett Johansson, I'll tell you that.
It's not. Although I think that's entirely because I don't think that character has ever been written as well as she deserves.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is a tragedy. And that's a whole thing because I don't think, with maybe the exception of Jessica Jones, I don't think Marvel has written female characters well in their films. Like even fucking Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts. Like,
I like Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts.
Gwyneth Paltrow's public persona has made it very hard for me to separate it from her in those films.
But Robert Downey Jr. not. That was a long time ago.
Just like Wesley Snipes, Robert Downey Jr. did his time.
Yeah. Okay.
Did his time. It's years ago.
Yeah.
And Robert Downey Jr. is also like, he's done like a lot of philanthropies, a lot of like charity appearances and stuff. Like he's clearly trying to be a better person. Also, he was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which
is
so fucking
good.
Wonderful movie.
I think that film solidified my love of Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Oh, Val Kilmer's great in that. Yeah. There's like three Val Kilmer movies I like. It's that, Willow, and...
Yes, of course.
Oh, sorry.
Of course, Willow.
Four. Val Kilmer as Elvis in True Romance. And Val Kilmer as the villain Dieter von Kunt in MacGruber.
Wow.
Those are the best Val Kilmer performances.
Yeah, Kiss Kiss.
I liked Val Kilmer as Batman. I liked his Batman.
He wasn't a terrible Batman.
It wasn't a great Batman movie, but I liked his
No,
his
he wasn't
Batman.
A bad Batman. My favorite part of Batman Forever is that there's when he asked Nicole Kidman to go out with them, the take is he looks at her and says, "Tell me, doctor, do you like the Thirkith?" And there's like a lisp in there. Like, I don't think it's as heavy as I'm making it out to be, but it's noticeable enough that I was like, that they couldn't do a better take than that. And it's that's always what I think of anytime somebody mentions Batman Forever and Val Kilmer.
Do you like the Thirkith?
Do you like the Thirkith?
Maybe that was just like take 1001 and they just couldn't get Kilmer not to say Thirkith.
I don't know.
Come on, Joel Schumacher. You could have. Joel Schumacher made Lost Boys. He could have pulled something better out of there. I know that some Joel Schumacher films have had some latent homosexual undertones. Lost Boys, especially.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I've only seen like half the movie, but just the title alone is enough latent homosexuality for me. Even.
Well, to give you an idea, one of the main characters played by Corey Haim, the Corey that wasn't in Goonies, at one point he opens the door to his closet and there's a poster of, if I remember this correctly, a shirtless Rob Lowe.
Why not?
I mean, I get it. Rob Lowe's dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But for a 14-year-old boy, it's so bizarre. There's also a scene with a shirtless saxophone player at one point in that movie. Because why the fuck wouldn't there be?
I like a shirtless saxophone player. Male or female.
No. Women can play sax, too. Chicks can do things, too, guys.
Except have a developed character in this film.
Yeah, or, again, any Marvel movie for the most part.
Yeah.
Mm. Batista as Drax the Destroyer. I think that would be my other one.
Oh, okay.
Batista as Drax is pretty great.
Yep. Yep.
That's Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. Pat.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have seen that.
I mean, I just
that.
Like Batista in everything.
Oh, Batista's so good.
He was great in the latest Bond film.
Oh, he was phenomenal. He was one of the best parts of the latest Bond film.
Yeah.
Like, that train fight is honestly probably the highlight of that Bond film, because they screwed the fucking pooch on having Christoph Waltz as a villain.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it.
I wanted
it a lot,
to.
It's no Skyfall, but...
No.
Yeah.
Like, Javier Bardem and Christoph Waltz, you want to talk about two actors who were born to be a Bond villain at some point. It's those two.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you mentioned that we got into the Bond films, because my issue with the last one largely is that they're setting up this idea that James Bond cannot be James Bond anymore, that that's an option. And I hate that a lot of comic book movies do that, like Nolan's Batman films, for one. Like the Dark Knight Rises effect is like, oh yeah, there hasn't been a Batman for 8 years. What? No, Batman's always Batman. Like, that's the whole fucking purpose of Batman. Like, I don't like this idea that... Because they did it with that. They did it with Punisher Warzone, which is still the best Punisher movie they've made. But, like, there's this idea that they throw in there is like, oh, yeah, this person's going to do, like, one last mission or whatever, and then they don't have to do what they do anymore. It's like, no, that's the whole character. Like, the whole reason Batman exists, the whole reason Punisher exists, whole reason Blade exists, is because they're driven by like this singular purpose. Like they have this just never ending war. Like even at the end of this movie, like he straight up says, like he's given a chance to be normal and walk away from this life, and he's like, no, there's still a war going on. Like, and the movie ends with him going right back into the fucking thick of it. And that's what one of the things that I love about the Blade movie, because like this movie could have ended and we could have never gotten another one, but like that still was a pretty good arc. Like, we know this character is going to keep doing what he's doing, even if we wouldn't have gotten a Blade 2, which would have been a real tragedy. But like, I like that the character is consistent in this, and that he really is devoted. And like, a lot of people, like, I feel like some people feel like the performance is kind of one-dimensional, but there's a lot going on with Wesley Snipes. Like, even like that moment where he gives his gun to Whistler, like he's just like looking at him the entire time. But like, you get everything from the glances he's given. It's like this is the only friend he's ever had.
Yeah.
And I feel like Wesley Snipes gets a lot, because realistically he has what, 20 lines this whole movie? Like, a lot of this movie...
he doesn't say much.
No, a lot of this movie is him beating the shit out of people and killing vampires. But, like, there's still a really solid performance in there. And I don't know how many actors are capable of pulling that off.
I don't know very many actors that could pull off that people always trying to ice skate uphill.
That's a great line. So, yeah, give him only 20 lines, but that's one of them.
Some motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill.
Yeah.
He gets some beautiful lines in every single one. It's a great proverb. I'm going to get it tattooed on me.
I've played enough Zelda games to know that it's probably really hard to go uphill when it's icy.
Yep, yeah. He gets a lot of great lines. I like that there's one or two moments where, like, he almost, it seems like he kind of breaks character just to swear at somebody. And one of them is in the hospital scene when the cops shoot him and he looks and like, motherfucker, you out your damn minds? I was like, that's like, he went high pitched Wesley Snipes for that. Not like this dark, growly blade voice he's doing. And then the other one, when he's slamming the cop's head on the back of the trunk and the cop says something to the effect of fuck you, he's like, fuck me, fuck this, and like pulls out his gun, but like he goes very high pitched with it for a minute and it's like, oh, there's Wesley Snipes. This is not Blade, that's Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie, like, just that dark, growly, like,
I also enjoyed the mouthed what the fuck when, yeah, he slices Stephen Dorff in half. Yeah.
Oh,
is that what he mouthed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He mouthed, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
And that final fight sequence almost didn't happen. One of the things, like, of course, when I bought this box set for the Blade trilogy, I watched all the special features. Originally, this movie ended with Stephen Dorff turning into a blood tornado and Wesley Snipes just throwing the serum things into him. And then, because the special effects looked awful, they decided to incorporate what became the final fight scene with the sword fight and everything, which is good that they did, because, man, it would have been terrible if the movie had ended the way they were originally going to do it.
Blood tornado, huh?
Yeah, it's just, the CG looked really bad. Like, you saw how it looked like when he got cut in half and then, like,
yeah,
mixed down. Like, the CG... it was very clearly, like, it did not hold up right there. Like, it was one of the few spots in the movie where the special effects were not great.
The few?
There were a few parts. There were a few parts.
I mean, there was something going on with the CGI there when the elder vampires had the lightning.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, a lot of skeletons.
And then, like, skeleton came out of their mouth, and then, like, a baby flying skeleton came out of their skeleton's skeleton mouth.
Yeah.
And...
well, the entire temple sequence, the CGI is definitely spy. But you also got to remember, this was 1998.
Yeah.
And, like, at this point, CG-wise, the biggest breakthroughs you've had have been Jurassic Park in 94 and then Starship Troopers in 1997. Mm-hmm. Matrix did not come out.
Matrix
was
99. Yeah.
So Matrix was a year later. Okay. And then you had, and then Frighteners had come out. So in terms of, like, substantial CGI breakthroughs, like, that was it at this point. So still not too bad for 1998 for $45 million budget film, the second theatrical Marvel comic book release. And then there is the part when they kill Udo Kier's character, Dragonetti, the elder vampire that they let bake in the sun, where he just looks like a Tool video, basically. Like, when he starts melting and shit.
Yeah, that's pretty
bad. Parts
of
him are just splitting open and...
yeah, like, or what is it, when Tot's face melts off in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
But aside from those... I think it doesn't look too shabby.
And I think the main reason this is R is language and violence.
Language, yeah, and violence, for sure. Absolutely.
It says brief sexuality, but I maybe the incest, the implied incest that almost happened.
Yeah, the implied. The old Blade getting the moves put on him by his vampire mom. Yeah, that guy.
I don't feel like there was a lot of.
There wasn't a lot.
On her neck. That scene's kind of hot, but.
Yeah. Well, I think just vampire movies in general, like, there's an expected sexuality that comes with them. Because, like, the whole mythology of vampires is very rooted in sexuality.
Yeah.
Right. And then there was definitely a blowjob going on
behind
that. Oh, yeah. That's the old blood rave blowjob. That must be what they're referring to when they say briefs. I forgot about that blowjob.
And then there's that really awkward part where Deacon and his gal are in the car, like, necking each other, but also, like, putting sunscreen on each other at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is pervasive vampire violence and gore.
I mean,
it was pervasive vampire violence. I like that just that vampire violence is in the description of why it's R.
I was trying to remember too, like, as we were watching this, because I've seen these movies a number of times, but, like, some of the smaller details escape you. And I was trying, like, we got almost all the way through the movie, and I was like, oh man, is this the one Blade movie where Blade doesn't kill any humans? And then it gets that scene where he shoots, like, 20 human security guards. I was like, oh no, he kills people in this. Okay, it's not just vampires.
Yeah.
Because that's something that comes into play when we get into the later Blade movies and all that stuff.
That's why when Frost had that little girl and he's, like, threatening that he's going to kill this little girl, I'm like, he doesn't care about that little girl.
Oh, but he does, though. He does. Like, not maybe not, like, individually, but, like, on the whole, like, his big weakness is that it's like his whole reason is to protect people, to save people, to spare them the fate that he's suffered. But that's why he doesn't have any friends beside Whistler.
Besides Rip Torn's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I
was expecting a little kiss between the two of them before.
Oh, between him and Whistler. I thought you were talking about him and Dr. Jensen.
Oh, no. Blade and Whistler had a little bromance going on there. I was kind of hoping.
Oh, yeah.
At least get a little peck.
It's a fun dynamic. I'm excited because, honestly, like, I love this first Blade. I love Blade 2 even more. It's absolutely my favorite of three. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. So I'm really excited to do that one with you guys.
Does he have a buddy in the second one? Like, does he have someone he can bring women home
I
to
don't,
and have garlic injected?
I don't
want to
spoil
necks.
Anything.
Oh my god!
So
the garlic.
We're absolutely,
can we talk about the garlic?
We do need
the garlic shot. Yeah, let's talk about. The
I know
garlic
we're pushing
shot.
Our time, but we got to talk about the garlic a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
That I couldn't help but laugh at all of that.
No, there are a couple of things that are very silly.
And there's a bottle that says essence of garlic.
It's just like vanilla extract, you know.
Sure.
I also really like the little quirk of the lore in this movie where they're always just like, holy water crosses faith. None of that does anything. But they don't fuck around with the garlic. Like, the garlic really gets them.
Yeah. Well, that's become a fairly common thing with a lot of vampire movies. Because, like, the first time I remember seeing anything was actually in Salem's Lot, where crosses didn't work unless you had the faith to back it. Because there's this really awesome scene where, like, the vampire they're after, like, the dude pulls out a cross, like, it's this priest, but then, like, the vampire, like, advances on him, basically, like, in a matter of seconds makes the dude doubt himself enough that the cross stops working. Wow. So, like, I like that element, and that's in a couple of them. I think that's really cool.
So how Italian do you have to be to get the garlic to work on him?
Very. But there's a whole crop of, like, really fun vampire movies, because this was a few years after From Dusk Till Dawn, which is one of my favorite vampire movies of all time as well. There's, like, stuff that came later, like Daybreakers, that had Ethan Hawke and Willem Dafoe, which actually, like, it's kind of similar, like, in terms of the world building, this where the idea is that basically vampires are kind of the ruling class of the world, and there's, like, a human resistance led by Willem Dafoe, and it's just, I like when movies, like, try and do more than just what's already been done with vampire mythology. And I think stuff like that, stuff like Blade, is really cool. But garlic.
Garlic.
The garlic. No, there's definitely a couple of goofy things.
I don't know why he had to go to some guy in a back alley to get his garlic too. He could have just gone to Kroger, you know.
He's helping out. Right. That guy's got kids to raise, man, and he's supporting a local That's business.
True. Yeah.
No, so you got to go somewhere else
garlic,
to get it.
Garlic salt, but yeah. never essence of garlic. Like no one, I've never known anybody to go out of their way to find what makes garlic garlic.
What is the essence
and,
of garlic?
And bottle it.
Well, let me ask you this. How many fucking vampires have you killed, Pat?
That's zero. Not a one.
Well, all right. So maybe I'm going to defer to Wesley Snipes on this one. Cool. Let's start winding down. So we are going to do a segment here called Gritty Reboot. There's a lot of every year we see reboots, adaptations, remakes of movies that have come before, and even in the last decade alone we've seen three different fucking Spider-Mans and getting started
Spider-Mans,
over. Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Mans. Spider-Mans. Spider-Boys. Spider-Boys
you
really
keep getting younger.
So basically we're going to go through this. Let's focus on the core cast of Blade, Dr. Karen Jensen, Deacon Frost, and Whistler. And then maybe if you want to recast a couple of side characters, by all means, let's do that. We're going to start with Pat and work our way backwards.
Jeez. What if
starting
I...
Starting with who?
With Pat.
Starting with Pat. Pat's answering first. Yeah. Okay.
One of my, you know... resulting weaknesses from not seeing a lot of movies is that I also don't know who actors and actresses' actual names are.
Okay.
So I might just have to be like, oh, this character from that movie.
I should probably
play.
Guess it.
Okay.
It would be a fun extra game.
I mean, I'm having a lot of trouble thinking of anybody besides Wesley Snipes to play Blade.
Good, you passed the test. Because anything other than Wesley Snipes is a fucking wrong answer. And Wesley Snipes can still play Blade. Wesley Snipes wants to keep playing Blade.
Yeah.
Like he's said in a couple of interviews now, like he wants to play the character
he's a
again.
True humanitarian.
Absolutely.
I mean, I made the joke already, but I feel like Rip Torn would be a great...
great Whistler? Whistler. Yeah. I was actually... You said that. I've been thinking about it.
And as far as Frost, which... just... what a vampire name.
Yeah.
Frost.
Yeah.
I don't... I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of shirtlessness from Frost, more so than Blade.
Yeah.
So, you
and just
know,
like skinny
I'm thinking,
little hairy Irish boy.
I mean, doesn't have to. Doesn't have. I mean, you can change the look. There's no rules.
I mean, I was into it.
Okay. Pat Deering's got a type.
I certainly do.
I don't think our type is the same. I don't know. You got anybody for Frost?
I don't know. I think Frost would have been cool if he was just a little bit more manic and a little bit because like when he just goes out of his way to kill
cop
Yuri or
the old dude.
Yeah, like yeah. I wasn't able to piece together like why that was entirely necessary. And I don't think I would have had that if you know he was just a little bit more off kilter.
Yeah.
So I don't know just there's any young actors currently who are just good at being a little bit like a little bug-eyed off balance.
Trying to think who I would cast as Frost. Trying to think if I was going to recast if I absolutely had to recast Blade, I would probably go Chadwick Boseman, the guy that played Black Panther in Civil War.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because like that, I've seen him in that and an episode of Justified, and he was fucking great in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like he'd be good. I think Rip Torn is a solid casting choice for Whistler.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I was thinking Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Bridges would be great,
yeah.
too. as, especially since as Hell or High Water, he just looks like he's doing a Kris Kristofferson impression.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'd put Kerry Washington as Karen.
Oh, that'd be good. She's solid.
Yeah. Yeah, how can you... You can't recast Blade. He's just... He is Blade.
Exactly. Oh, Idris Elba. Oh, man. He'd be a stoked as fuck Blade. He wouldn't be able to do the martial arts, though.
No.
Whereas Chadwick Boseman seems like he's in peak fucking form.
Yeah, and that was really great choreography.
Oh, yeah. The fight that choreography was... in these movies is really fucking on point.
Yeah.
Like, Wesley Snipes has, like, multiple black belts. Like,
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. Like, he legit, like, he built a career out of being a genuine action star, like, through training and fucking earning. I think he has black belts. I want to say Hapkido is one of them, and then a couple others. But, like, dude's fucking, he's a beast.
Yeah.
I love Wesley Snipes, you guys. I don't think I can stress that enough.
Well, and I think maybe just because I'd like to see Wesley Snipes fight him, let's put Batista as Frost.
Oh, Batista as Frost, that'd be good.
It'd be an entirely different character, yeah. But why not? He'd need fewer lines.
Yeah, man. No, I'm not going to ruin the surprise. I'm going to let you guys find out when we get there.
All right. Find out when we get there.
Man, for Frost, I keep thinking about Walton Goggins, but I think it's less that he would be a good Frost and more that I just like Walton Goggins a lot. he was the racist sheriff in Hateful Eight.
Oh, okay.
Sheriff Chris Mannix. Actually, no, I think if I were going to recast Frost, I want to say, like, I would want to cast a black actor, but I also love Terry Crews, but Terry Crews would not be a good Frost. Like, Terry Crews would be a great, like, flunky or, like, sidekick. Like, man, I'm trying to think, like, for Frost, too.
Terry Crews would be, like, a good Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, oh, man, Terry Crews would be a great Mr. Freeze. But fucking Aaron Paul. As Frost. Jesse from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm into that.
Actually, yeah. Yeah.
I think that fits
perfectly with that manic little weirdo thing I had.
I keep thinking of Channing Tatum, but I think it's just because he's shirtless so much.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's kind of just what I want to
say. Although I will say, Hateful Eight and Hail Caesar, like, and even 21 Jump Street's like, Channing Tatum's got some chops. Like, he's not a bad actor.
Oh, he's... It was Hail Caesar that... Because I didn't want to like him because I was like, he's just a pretty boy and all the
but
girls
he's
are like,
so
oh,
good. Like, and he's,
but he's so good in that, at the dancing and the comedic timing.
And the Jump Street movies. Yeah, like, he's fucking hilarious. He's the funniest part of the Jump Street movies.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for a charming, good-looking guy that's also funny.
If I were going to do... Though? Oh, yeah. Who isn't?
Aren't we all?
If I were going to do any side character recast, I would cast Werner Herzog as a Dragonetti. just because, man, that dude needs to play more characters. Because the episode of Parks and Recreation he's in as the crazy realtor, he's phenomenal. Well, and then
which character is this? Is this the one that they
Dragonetti.
Explode on the beach?
Yes, yeah.
See, because I'm seeing Tim Curry in that role. But like a younger Tim Curry.
Tim Curry would be good, but oh my God, Werner Herzog, he's the villain in Jack Reacher too, the first one. And like at one point, like he's just talking to one of his henchmen and it's a story about how in his youth he was trapped in a Siberian prison camp and he ate his own fingers to survive.
Oh my God.
And I was like, part of me hopes that this isn't scripted. Part of me just like wants to imagine that the director just rolled film and said, hey, Werner, do some crazy bullshit. Like, it's, I think he would be good for that. I could see Chris Pratt as a Quinn.
Okay. Okay.
Quinn was the guy that got his hand cut off repeatedly.
Yeah.
Donald Logue
Chris,
character.
Yeah. I could see Chris Pratt.
Chris,
doing that.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would be good, too, to have something that...
Or just, like, go like full comedian and have like Jim Gaffigan play that character. Just like take out all the badass of that character and just go full comedian. Because that's what I liked about
Blade,
oh, what is the actor?
I owe you one.
The guy who plays Quinn, I like that he's got, he had a good balance of both, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Donald Logue's a solid fucking actor.
Yeah.
Like he's good. Like that dude, he can do both. And honestly, like Grounded for Life was not a terrible show. Like he was really good in it.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it.
Cool. Well,
I look forward to seeing the second one.
Cool. Well, let's wrap up. Let's do our favorite scenes. We'll start with Winks and work our way.
Oh gosh, favorite scenes. Don't start with me.
Okay.
I gotta think.
Favorite scenes. I really, really enjoyed the blood rave at the very beginning, and I spent at least 10 minutes trying to think of stupid jokes about raves in the back of a meatpacking plant, and realized I couldn't come up with anything better than actually what had happened in that scene.
For me, it's pretty much the same. That opening scene is one of the best character introductions in any comic book movie ever. I said earlier, like, the Blade movies is pretty much the only time that I really like electronic music. Because it fits, and the action scenes are so well done, and that fucking pan up shot of Blade, like when that dude looks up and sees this dude in a trench coat with a sword and guns, like that. I don't think there's a more badass intro to any character in a movie. How about you, Winx?
I'm gonna go with the final fight scene. I think it's that late '90s electronica that kicks in.
Oh, that song is
that
song's so good too.
Yeah. It's just
the phrase is the dude repeatedly saying, "I got struck by lightning."
Oh well, and
that's
they did.
The dude is saying, "Yeah,
they did."
But yeah, that fight scene is so good. Like, and Blade starts wailing on a couple of dudes with a fucking shovel.
Yeah,
and then just that turn with the sword at the end is so badass.
In the mouthed, what the fuck?
Yeah, just, oh, so good.
It's a nice moment.
I did enjoy the goofy little scene where they dumped Karen into like the sub basement and her like ex was down.
Yeah,
her
we've
unexplained
all been
ex.
There.
I like that they dump her down into a pit of concrete and she doesn't break any bones. Yeah. That is
well, they kind of explain it going into it, but you have to be like really listening for it.
Oh, because she's turning. She's
well, no, with her ex.
Oh, her.
Yeah, with the dude in the basement that they drop her into. Because basically what happens is like sometimes when people get bit, like they don't turn fully and they become ghouls, which is essentially what he was.
Oh, but that doesn't explain why she didn't break her legs falling down in the pit.
That does not explain that. Oh. You're right.
I was saying that thought maybe that was
she
was turning.
Pat mentioned that thing, but yeah.
It was odd. And I guess, he did look a bit like a ghoul.
Yeah.
But also he was like down there just like chatting to himself and he used the word levity in there, which was like a 4-point vocab word compared to any other word in the movie.
Especially for a ghoul.
Yeah, it's especially for a ghoul.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he was a ghoul with at least what we know had to have been a nursing degree.
Yeah.
Maybe even a doctor's.
Yeah, because he was Karen's boss.
Was
yeah.
When he said he like gave her time off or something.
Yeah.
So I got really into like the backstory of these two morgue workers.
Yeah.
Finding love over
the hematologist.
Well, yeah, she was a hematologist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because finding love over a cadaver is something that I hope to do someday. So I
hope
really
to discuss with an ex what happened between us as he's cutting open a body. That's not really at all. ever.
Bisecting that chest cavity.
No, yeah, he's just cutting open a burned body.
Awesome.
Not a good time for this talk, hon.
The best time. Cool. Let's wrap it up with plugs really quick. The big one, Pat and Nikki are both putting together the Whiskey Bear Comedy Festival with me this year. They are part of the planning committee for that. We're currently doing an Indiegogo fundraising drive to procure funding for that. You can check that out at whiskeybearcomedyfestival.com. If you're a comedian interested in submitting, you can submit through the website and go there. The fundraising drive ends Friday, March 3rd, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is the biggest thing that we've got going right now.
And the festival itself is May 9th through 16th.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And then as we get closer there, whiskeybearcomedyfestival.com, there will be more schedules, details posted regarding the schedule, things like that. You can also check things out at whiskeybearcomedy.com, like Whiskey Bear Comedy on Facebook, the umbrella that we produce all these comedy shows under. Nikki Pent, do you guys have any individual plugs right now?
I just would put out there the new Noise show every third every third Friday of each month over at Defining Skin Tattoo. Dustin and I are putting that on. Great little concept where we have Columbus comedians, but every time they're on the show, the next time they come back, they can't repeat any joke they've done previous. So it's a brand new show every single time. That's been a lot of fun.
Very cool. I every Tuesday at Backstage Bistro at Shadowbox Live, Tuesdays with Mac and Winks. We've got something different every week. So that's what I got going on.
Bam. Perfect. Yeah. Sounds pretty good. All right. Well, thank you to our silent partner, Eric Caprell, our audio technician and also our research assistant throughout the podcast. Big thanks to Nikki Winkleman and Pat Deering, my guests on the show.
Thank you, Dustin.
Absolutely. Happy to have you guys on. Looking forward to finishing up the trilogy. Well, looking forward to Blade 2. Gonna be glad to be done with Blade Trinity. But we'll get through that. So we'll have these guys on next time. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time. It's the big